Hello and welcome to Coffee Talk. My name is Trevor Huth, and I'm of course joined by Nate the Great Kosher. Nate, how we doing?
I'm doing good, Trevor, and I'm hoping that our fantasy baseball teams don't get eclipsed this week.
Ha ha ha! We are recording this on Eclipse Day. Ha ha! That's a good one. Great way to start. We're off to a rip-roaring start here. Once again, this is Coffee Talk as a part of the Pitcher List podcast network, where we are always ready for that next cup of coffee. And you mentioned our Pitcher List league. I couldn't honestly tell you how I'm doing. I don't think it's great, but I'll let you start and talk about your team so I can check in on mine. I have been checking and setting lineups, but I have not been looking to see how the outcome is actually happening. So I'll let you go ahead and start, Nate. Why don't you tell us how you're doing in our Pitcher List staff league?
Sure. I didn't see how you were doing either, but so a few weeks
ago. Must not be good.
A few weeks ago, we talked about our fantasy baseball draft we were doing. This is a redraft league. And unfortunately,
There are several. Just to point out the format, there are several of these leagues, and it's a relegation style. So if you lose and you're in a higher league, you move down. We're both in the lowest league. If we lose, we get, like, I don't know, fired from Pitcher List or something. I'm not really sure. But if you're in the bottom half of the league and you're in one of the higher leagues, you move down. We don't actually move down. We just get to try again next year if we want to.
And it's looking like that might happen to me. So I had Spencer Strider. That was my first round pick.
Oof.
Seemed like a good idea to draft him along with Eury Pérez from the Marlins. And Luis Robert Jr. also likely to only miss 6 to 8 weeks with a hip flexor strain. That's the positive news. So, needless to say, I lost my first week. It's just win the week or lose the week, you know, depending on the stat categories, and I lost. So I'm in ninth place.
But, I mean, you need to change your name to the Oofs.
Yeah.
That's rough. That
hurts. Man,
I got hit with Yuri in a league, but that's rough what you're going through right now.
I mean, all these pitcher injuries, it's just crazy. And I figured that we'd talk about this week. And of course I was hit by them on my team. What, what happened on your team? Did you figure
I lost the first week, so I'm technically in eighth place ahead of Nate. That's an important distinction.
There you go.
We have the same record, but Yahoo tells me I'm in first, or I'm ahead of him. I'm in eighth. I actually don't have an excuse like injuries. I'm mostly healthy other than Paul Sewald, who's on the 15-day IL. But everybody else is really healthy. The only other person I have C.J. Abrams, who's day-to-day. And I have Jackson Holliday, who I thought was going to start in the majors, but I'm not going to drop him. No. So I just have him sitting on my bench in a not available spot while he's hitting dingers in Norfolk. That Tides team is crazy. We'll talk about it. But it's amazing, and I love the debate going on. Can they beat the Athletics? I have thoughts. But before we get there, those injuries, man, it's kind of crazy what's going on.
It's been a heck of a week, just left and right over the past week. Star pitchers have been going down. So we heard Spencer Strider, and then I think it was on Saturday, out of the blue, Shane Bieber, who I have on a different league, there was no indication there was anything wrong. He had a great start. All of a sudden, I see an O by his name. I'm like, oh, what's it? You know, what's happened? Bieber done for season. Tommy John surgery. I'm like, what? This completely out of nowhere. And it started this debate about, is it the pitching or is it the time clock? You know, is it, what are pitchers doing differently? Is it training? And so I wanted to get into this. Maybe we can right now or later, but I was going to ask you how you think this rash of injuries will affect pitching prospect training. And is this just a blip, or is this, you know, a bigger problem that we have to look at?
I am not qualified to answer this question, first of all. But I would encourage people to look up, because I was just watching it right before we went on, to look up Justin Verlander from, I believe it came out today, Monday, and look at what he said. Because he, I think he has the right idea where it's kind of a combination of everything going on. And that is maybe the shorter pitch clock could be playing a factor. I'm not sure if it is or not. It makes sense to me personally that the newer form of max effort throwing all the time plays a part in it.
Yeah.
And it makes sense that there's a lot of things. And one of the things that Justin Verlander said that I really liked is that it starts top down. So whatever you do at the major league level, that's where everybody wants to get. So once major league level is looking for these guys who are topping out at 100 with massive spin sliders and being able to put max effort out in that, then that trickles down to that's what you're looking for D1, which means that's how you're going to train at the high school. So he made an interesting point that if there is going to be a change made, it's going to change baseball as a whole because it starts from the top down in terms of what you're looking for out of pitchers. So, I would love to believe it's a blip. I would love to believe this is some isolated bad luck situation. Mm-hmm. And you know, sometimes there are just a litany of injuries early in the season. That's a thing.
Yeah.
But it's hard to really believe for me that this is just some random occurrence because I never threw hard enough for my UCL to have any sort of injuries to it, but I didn't take care of my arm and I still my arm hurts a lot. My elbow tells me when it's going to rain.
Interesting.
And I'm not even 30 years old yet. So the pitching motion, it can hurt your arm, and it does. And I saw something that said, you know, when you're growing up or until you reach a certain age, like your UCL is not really supposed to hold up to throw 95 in high school. And whether that be true or not, it sounds like it probably is because you're obviously still growing. So there's just a whole lot going on and max effort pitching is super fun for us. Right. I mean, we get all the nasty sliders and all of the big velos, yeah, and
as fans and fantasy players, it's fun.
But then you think back to let me ask you this, Nate. If I were to ask you to give me a pitcher the first pitcher that comes to your mind in terms of longevity, recently, okay, what pitcher comes to your mind?
Well, I'll give you two. I don't know how recent you'd say these are, but Jamie Moyer and Bartolo Colon.
Okay, both good examples. I go to Justin Verlander because he's pitched for a long time with minimal injury. And if you remember, vintage Verlander was pick up velo as the game goes on. By his ninth inning, that's when he was throwing his hardest pitches. Or by the end of his outing, that's when he was throwing his hardest pitches. And even he, in that video I was referring to earlier, talks about how pitching has changed because when he started, it was, you know, try to get weak contact, throw it low and away, make sure you're keeping it out of a hitting zone where they can do damage. Well, now the hitters have so much power, they can, you know, and he mentions this too, they can hit home runs to the opposite field a lot more often, and there's a lot more that can happen. So the way that you have to pitch has changed, and I think that probably has played a part, but again, I'm not qualified to really speak on it as if I have any facts, but I think that there's some good points being made by those who are involved with Major League Baseball that are worth listening to.
Yeah, I think we're going to hear a lot more of it as the season progresses, and it's interesting, you know, because pitchers these days typically go shorter in games. You know, they're not pitching 6, 7, 8 innings. If you can get a quality start, that's good, but it just doesn't happen that much anymore. And, you know, you look at the innings count and workload from guys, let's say, even in the 90s, early 2000s, and it's, you know, way more. But now we're having the rash of injuries. So it's interesting to think about. Something to keep an eye on as fantasy players, but also just fans of the game.
And Nate, that's where the data nerds, I'm kidding. Data is great. I'm not absolutely not on that side of things. Data is fantastic. Data is good. Data tells us so much stuff. But that's I keep pointing to Verlander. You guys just have to watch the video if you're listening to this. But he talks about how the data says the pitchers don't need to go a third time through because it just doesn't go well.
Yeah.
And that plays into the you can go max effort. That plays into the just you're only getting two times through. So he said he would love to see that. Or he talked to Max Scherzer about ways that you could incentivize pitchers getting the third time through. And that could help too, because then you really can't go max effort, and that could help arms. Just one idea that came again from Verlander. Great video. Go find it. I think I saw it through Codify on X. So
I will check that out.
Yeah, I recommend anybody listen to it. And Nate, I'm sorry, I did cut you off there. Do you have any more thoughts here on this injury topic?
No, I was just saying that, you know, I think it's bigger than fantasy. It, you know, affects the game itself. I saw the Players Association came out with a statement, and it's going to be something we're hearing a lot about. So more to come.
For sure, more to come. And obviously any pitcher who got hurt, this is their career. This is their, you know, what they do for a living. So hopefully they can recover and come back with minimal issue for both the game, because these are some high level pitchers going out, and for themselves. Because again, this is how they make a living. If I tore my UCL working at an elementary school, I would hope I come back for my career as well. You know, it's just a little different.
It's their livelihood.
Because I can continue my job if I have a torn UCL. So we talked about the Norfolk Tides and how they're just hitting dingers. They're actually doing a little bit more than that. They're embarrassing teams by football scores on a consistent basis. They're a really good team. The Norfolk Tides are the AAA team for the Boston. Woo! My gosh, it must have been a long day for this eclipse. The Baltimore Orioles. And it has very high-level prospects such as Jackson Holliday, such as Heston Kerstad, such as Connor Norby's on that team, Kobe Mayo's on that team, Kyle Stowers, I believe, is on that team. And they're playing like it. They are just coming out guns blazing. I think they put up 30 runs on a team in the game where Heston Kerstad had 10 RBIs, double-digit RBIs in one game. Yeah,
I thought that was actually a mistake when I saw that at first. Like, so, it can't be just in this game. Maybe it's in the series. You know,
when he did that, I looked it up, and there were three people in Major League Baseball at the time who didn't have less RBIs than he had in the one game. There were two players with 10 and one player with 11 at the time. Mookie was the one with 11. I can't remember who the two with 10 were, but just for what he did in one game.
Yeah.
So the fun question here, Nate, is if you put the Oakland Sacramento A's against the Norfolk Tides in a series, let's say a 7-game series, who do you think wins?
That's a great question.
And by the way, this is a conversation that's going to be on almost every single baseball podcast. So if you don't like our answer, just find another one.
Yeah. And I've heard this before in different sports, like when Alabama was dominant in football a few years ago, it's like, could they beat whatever the worst NFL team was? And you start to think about it like, well, those are professionals. They're older, they're stronger in football, that is. But I think it's different in baseball, that the Tides would actually have a chance. These guys are all of them you just rattled off. I mean, they're ready for the big leagues, and it's not like they're at some physical disadvantage because they're not strong enough or quick enough yet. I think it could go either way. Honestly, the game we were talking about, Jackson Holliday. Let's see. I just had it pulled up here.
He went like Holliday five for went six four, or something crazy.
Yeah, 4 for 6 with a pair of doubles, RBI and walks. Mayo went 5 for 7 with a double and a triple. And then we have here. Let's see, Kyle Stowers. Oh, we didn't even mention him. 3 home runs. I mean, it's just insane. So I think at least offensively, they definitely have a chance, you know?
Yeah. And I'm with you in terms of the football argument. I've never taken the side of the college team because the pro, it's just different. like how they get the pros ready and all that stuff. Here we're talking about the difference between a AAA team, a really good AAA team, and what is not a very good MLB team. And I think if you have a 7-game series, obviously anything can happen. So this is all just purely theoretical and in terms of how I think the talent stacks up. In a 7-game series, I think you go all 7 games. I really do. And I think it gets really interesting because it's not the hitting for me. It's the pitching. Because the Norfolk Tides pitching will have at least some pitchers that don't have major league experience. And they'll be facing major league hitters, and that can be a problem.
Yep.
And the Baltimore pitchers will be facing several, like the prominent bats are minor league hitters who don't have major league experience. And that's going to factor in. But ultimately, if you were to ask me who in a 7-game series wins, I take the Norfolk Tides, but I think it goes to 7. I think it's a lot closer than people realize. Because I think a lot of people are just seeing the scores and going, oh, Norfolk would just absolutely like
crush them,
monster the A's. Like, it's, I don't think it's that. I think it's really close. Yeah,
I don't think so either.
I do think Norfolk could pull it out because, as you mentioned, baseball is a little different. And also, we're not talking the difference between college and pros. We're talking about the difference between the second highest level of pro ball and the highest level of pro, or, you know, in the highest level. So I think that it's really close, and I think that there's enough talent on Norfolk where they could pull it out in a 7-game series, but I don't think it's going to be a runaway.
Yeah, I think it would be close. I mean, that's for sure. And this is just for fun, hypothetical. Obviously, this has never happened, but it tells you that's how good Norfolk's doing, that this is even a discussion, right? I mean, that's
right.
How historically stacked this roster is.
And that feeds into what we've been talking about anytime an Orioles hitting prospect comes up, and that's what are they going to do? It's crazy. It is insane that they're going to have to make some crazy decisions that, I mean, it's a good problem to have, but they have decisions coming up they can't play everyone. There's only 9 spots. And obviously, you have your bench roles and all, but you have to take into account the fact that they have these veterans, because you can't just throw out an all-rookie lineup. Maybe they could. But you know, they have the veterans that are on roster that they can't just cut. And they don't necessarily just want to sell off because they have to, right? So they have to find the right way to put this puzzle together without wasting the primes of their prospects, because we've seen that happen. Mm-hmm. And without losing the competitive edge that the veterans give you. There's going to be some decisions coming up in Baltimore, and they're really going to test the metal and the decision-making of the front office, which has stood up to every single test so far. So I expect good things.
Yeah. And I think we said this before, like obviously a great problem to have, but it does make you think if eventually they'll have to make some sort of trade or trades to make it all fit, you know,
but or with this recent run of injuries, maybe they just hang tight.
True. Yeah, that's true.
Very interesting stuff. I do want to give you a minute, Nate, to talk about your boy, Davis Schneider.
That's right. So Davis Schneider, who I was talking about maybe as a sneaky pickup, second baseman for the Blue Jays, clutch home run the other night. So he has 2 home runs and 14 at bats, which is a great ratio if that were to play out over the full season, of course. But the other night, they were down 2 outs, 9th inning, and he was facing Josh Hader, clutch home run. And then the Blue Jays rallied over the Astros, got the victory. So just needed to do a little bragging. I sent you a text saying my guy, so I'm gonna claim him. He's my number one coffee talk guy, so I am hoping there's more success.
Oh man, awesome. Yeah, no, that was a good call. And it's like, what if this guy who fits into this coffee talk mold, that kind of bubble type player that might help you in fantasy, what if he finds power? He's been putting up some good EVs,
yeah,
as far as like from what I can tell or from what I've seen,
right? And he's not that big of a guy. He's, you know, he's strong, he's compact, and we'll see if the, you know, the Blue Jays before the season were kind of mum about where he was going to play. I think they're going to try him at a few different positions. Likewise to the Orioles discussion, where does he fit in? But I hope they're getting him some at bats and not just, you know, pinch at bats. That's the home run he hit the other night. I think it was just he came in for that at bat. He hadn't started the game. So we'll see what happens, but happy with the early returns.
Well, that was a good call by you, Nate. Now, the big question is, if Davis Schneider is your guy on Coffee Talk, who's my guy on Coffee Talk? Well, I have a candidate for that coming up. I want to talk about him. But first, we're going to take a quick break here. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about what's in the news. Of course, we're going to talk some prospects. And we got more great stuff coming up here on Coffee Talk for Nate Kosher. My name is Trevor Huth. And on Coffee Talk, this is where we're always ready for that next cup of coffee. So make sure to stick around. We're going to take a quick break. More Coffee Talk coming up as part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. And welcome back to Coffee Talk on the Pitcherless Podcast Network. My name is Trevor Huth. Alongside me, of course, is Nate Kosher. And I love that I intro'd that and actually honestly outro'd that like we were doing a broadcast on a baseball game.
That was exciting. I like that. You got into it because of my Davis Schneider excitement.
I did, man. So who's my Davis Schneider guy? I got to find one. I got to have one. And I don't know who that is yet. I'm not going to lock it in, but the guy who I would love for it to be, one guy who I would love for it to be, is Justin Foscue, who was a first round pick in 2020, who I've loved watching when I have to write scouting reports on. I'm a huge fan of his ability just to make contact. I'm a huge fan of his hit tool. He gets the call. He gets his first MLB hit, and then something doesn't feel right, and he hits the IL. Oh, dagger. Oh, man.
Off to such a good start. first major league hit and RBI.
So he's in a rough spot. Right? He's in a rough spot, though, because he plays for Texas. And there's not a whole lot of spots on that infield. He only got the call because Josh Young is hurt. And he was filling time there, filling at bats there. And, I mean, good for him. I'm glad he got the call up. I'm glad he got a chance. I'm glad he got his first MLB hit. I wish he didn't get hurt. I am a huge fan of what Foscue can do with the plate. I don't know that it's going to be a ton of power ever. I don't know if that's a fantasy relevant profile, to be completely honest with you. But I love the at-bats he takes, and I love his hit tool, and I've always been a huge fan of what he does. He just is a good baseball player. You know, and those are really fun guys to have. Those are really fun guys to watch. So speedy recovery to him. I didn't see what the injury was or how long he's going to be out. I just saw he was injured and got a little sad.
That it is bad timing. to think about the roller coaster of emotions, if that was you, you know, coming up, made the major leagues, probably a lifelong dream, great first game, and then boom, you get hurt. I mean, that's got to be terrible. It's a left oblique strain, by the way. So
obliques are tough.
That's what we talked about with Duran, right, on the Twins. I think that was what happened to him too. So they called up Davis Wenzel from Round Rock to replace him. I don't know if you know him. He's batted .314 with three home runs in 9 games this season.
I've watched him just peripherally. He's never been a guy that I've made it a point to watch. And to my knowledge, he's never done anything when I've watched this stuck out. But obviously, he's performing very well, and that's a good thing. And he earned the call, so good for him. And best of luck to him. And if he does perform well in a week, we might be mentioning him on Coffee Talk, the podcast. This one, actually, that you're listening to. Tell your friends about it. Anyway. Yeah, stay tuned. We'll see. But you want to talk about a roller coaster of emotions, Nate. Imagine being a guy named Ricardo Pinto, a reliever for the Philadelphia Phillies. And this is a roller coaster of emotions. Imagine this, if you will. Let's all put ourselves in Mr. Pinto's shoes. they tell you, hey, you're going up. Congratulations. You get excited because that's where you want to go. The majors is where you want to be. You're on the way. You hit traffic. And eventually in the traffic, you realize, I'm not going to make the game on time. You probably get sad.
That's got to be the worst feeling. And traffic's bad enough.
You show up
on its own.
You get there. You fight through the traffic. You get there before the game's over. They go, hey, you're going in. You're probably super nervous because you just spent most of your day in traffic. And I can honestly tell you, I've pitched enough to know that if I was stuck in traffic all day, pitching would not be the thing I want to do when I get out of it.
No.
But they say you're pitching. It's your job. You're happy to do it. You're still kind of excited because you put on a big league uniform. You go in the game and you record a save. Not just any situation. It is a high leverage situation after you've been stuck in traffic all day. You don't get to the game on time and you record a save. You have to be on top of the world, but that is quite the day, emotionally speaking.
And this was the game Bryce Harper hit three home runs, had already hit three home runs in this game. He's providing the firepower. It's funny to think about him at the one end of the spectrum. Major league superstar, face of the game, and this guy coming in out of traffic, 1 foot still in the cab, practically nabbing the save. That's why baseball is so fun, though, right? I mean, he could do nothing else the rest of his career, but he'd always have this one game from early in the season, and it's going to be a story that goes down in baseball lore.
It's just crazy what can happen because, I mean, mentally, just from a mental standpoint, there's no way he's fully ready for that game.
No, I'm sorry. Not at all.
Maybe he was. Maybe he locked in. I mean, that's a skill relievers have to have. But, I mean, just with everything you went through that day, it would be really hard to just get locked in fully. Like, you could do your job. You played enough baseball where you can go through the motions. But you can't go through the motions against big leaguers. So he had to have found a way to just lock in enough, man. That's awesome. I mean, super happy
for Pinto. One inning to get ready.
That's insane. Talk about getting hot in a hurry. Oh, man. My gosh. But good for him. That's fantastic. So, Nate, we're going to talk about someone else now. And the Dynasty and Prospects channel within the Pitcherless Discord, which, by the way, if you're not in, you should get in. But the Dynasty and Prospects channel is going to be very proud of us for talking about this. There's a Mets pitcher named Christian Scott, who is somebody to keep an eye on because he's nasty and he's doing some nasty stuff. It's going great for him. And he could be up with the Mets very, very soon.
And I don't think I am in that Discord channel. So thank you for that recommendation. I need to join that. But yes, so Christian Scott, he began the season in Double A, and then he moved up in Triple A, or did he start in Triple A? I admit I don't know. Was this his first start of the season?
I know he was impressing in spring training, and so I believe he would have started at Triple A. And again, the channel and the Pitcherless Discord is going to get mad at me, but he is in Triple A now. That is where he started. So. Yes. Okay. It was his first start. Now,
yep, that's what I was trying to figure out.
That had some ups and downs to it, if we're being honest, because he went four innings, gave up five hits, gave up a pair of home runs, but that was only three total runs, and he struck out nine. So there's some really good parts to that. There's some questionable parts to that.
Yeah, nine strikeouts. Obviously, that jumps out at you with just four innings of pitching, 19 swings and misses, no walks, so that's good, but the five hits, that is concerning. So you want to keep watching him. The strikeouts obviously are something that we'd be very happy about in a pitching prospect. But I'd like to see a little bit more for him. I was thinking it's someone we definitely need to start putting on our radar, but I wouldn't add him at this point quite yet, but it's probably coming soon, right?
Yeah, I mean, in redraft, you definitely probably don't have to add him until he gets called up. I don't think anybody's going to go speculative add Christian Scott. It's not right. He's not a Jackson right. Holiday or, you know, the level of that level of prospect that you hold on your bench in redraft. So you could probably wait until he gets called up. But if you do see he gets called up, I would attempt to pounce on it because, you know, there's every chance he could help you just because of the strikeout numbers and because of the stuff he has. He might be a valuable asset in fantasy, or he could be, he could not be. But it's worth the risk of holding him on your bench to find out if you can. Once he gets called up, again, you don't have to jump out at him right now.
Right. And the Mets, you know, they had their disastrous season last year after they spent all the money. This season, it's, you know, I would say it's still too early to tell, but they're not doing great. So you'd think the owner there with all the money that's spent would get probably a little bit anxious, and it wouldn't surprise me if they do make some moves, you know, and try to shake things up.
Yeah, we'll have to see what happens. It probably depends on how their season goes. But that could be said about any team at this point. We're not very far into the season, so yeah, I think every team's kind of in a let's just see how it goes kind of right. phase.
Yeah, they're 4-6 presently. I mean, still too early to tell, but I mean, after all the money he spent, Cohen, that's his name, Steve Cohen, right? I mean, yes. I don't think he can have another year of no success. So if they continue to slide, he's going to probably want to make some moves.
Yeah, for sure. Speaking of moves, one that happened, again, today, recording Monday, was that the Tigers called up Wensiel Perez. And I just want to get out profile on Wensiel mm-hmm. Perez. He was added to the roster because Andy Ibanez went out, and I assume he'll take over a similar role to Andy Ibanez, where he's just kind of filling in wherever on some days. For fantasy purposes, Wensiel Perez is a hit over power profile, so he's going to make more contacts than he has produced any power for you. He's not going to help too much in the speed game. So really, this is a guy who I don't, unless you're in a very, very deep league, and I mean like a 30-team league like I'm in, mm-hmm. I really don't think you need to worry about Wensiel Perez or spend your fab on Wensiel Perez or even use a roster spot on him for fantasy purposes. It's been a long time coming for him to get this call, and I'm really excited to see how he does, especially as a Tigers fan. And I hope he does really, really well, but I can't see him being a super fantasy relevant name. Real life, absolutely, he's a great baseball player. The fantasy relevancy is where he's kind of losing it in terms of what we need for this podcast, you know?
Right. Yeah. And some speed also potentially, but nothing that it would rise to the coffee talk level, I don't think, right?
Yeah, that's what I mean, is that it seems like he would be one of our guys. I don't think he's going to produce enough counting stats, I should say, to be a super fantasy relevant name.
There we go. Yeah.
So but that's just, again, a quick profile on Wensiel in case you were thinking about it, or in case you've already done it, maybe you can just hit the little reverse button on that if you trust our outcomes here. There are a few other guys, Nate, that you thought might be able to make an impact this year. So do you want to share one or two of them or a few?
Yes. So I was just going to say another infielder who I think we could still count as a prospect. I was going to get your feeling on this, but he's in his second season with the Brewers, and that's Bryce Terang. And so he has come out. And speaking of speed, he already has 7 steals this season, and he's been on fire. He's hitting .360. So I think he's pretty highly touted. Last year, he struggled. He played 137 games with the Brewers, hit .218, 6 home runs, 26 stolen bases. And now he's in his second season, as I stated. So I think still prospecty, right? But he already played almost the whole season, but he's just someone that's jumping out. He's young, exciting. Someone I would add, actually, at this point with what he's shown.
Yeah, I was always a Turang fan. I always thought that there was a lot in there, and more to get to, especially early in his career before he kind of found his quote unquote power stroke. You know, because for a while there, he was putting up single digit home runs, and then all of a sudden, around 2022, he started putting up more than that. He put up double digits or close to double digits. I think last year he was at 9. But for the fantasy relevancy, and when you were making fantasy lists, you always kind of needed him to show that power, and he never did. So when he came up last year and played, as you said, most of the season, 137 games, and he hit 218, that's not super helpful for fantasy. You know, he slashed 218, 285, 300, and that's just really not going to get it done for anybody in fantasy. So that's scary. And especially bringing back this year, especially with the fact that he's got Oliver Dunn breathing down his neck for time at second base. His speed is helpful. He stole 26 bases last year. He's already stolen 7 this year. He's hitting 360, or he's slashing 360, 414, 440. He hasn't hit a home run yet. His walk rate's a little bit elevated. I think he's maybe swinging a little bit more early on because he's feeling it. It's a risk to take because you're basically betting on the fact that he's going to have to keep hitting the ball. And keep in mind right now, this is a very small sample. He's played 8 games and has 29 plate appearances. He has a 474 BABIP. So you're betting on him to get on base enough to where his speed helps you. And especially if you're in a league, because I'm in a few leagues like this where where your scoring says power is more important, Bryce Turang becomes a lot more difficult to roster. And I think that depending on what your team build is, if you need speed, then yeah, Turang's probably a guy who could help you. But if your team build is not such that speed's the only thing you need and you have everything else, I don't know if Turang's necessarily going to be a guy for you, but he's going to get a lot of opportunity to do so. And like you said, he's hitting the cover off the ball right now. It's just a proceed with caution kind of thing, or even in some cases, maybe a sell high kind of thing. If you're going to predict that his performance goes down, which, you know, his BABIP and history says that it probably will.
Yeah. That's a good point. Maybe it's a guy you can ride for a couple of weeks if you're looking to fill a hole from an injury, or maybe you do look to sell high and see what you can get in return. Yeah, that's a good point.
It just the way I see it with him. I mean, it's a rough road. And I'm a Turang fan. I really do like him as a baseball player, but he was always in that Jonathan India build of they kind of do a little bit of everything pretty well. Obviously, his speed is a little better than pretty well, and his power is a little less than pretty well, at least his game power. So it's kind of a gamble, not one I'm necessarily taking for my fantasy teams, but, you know, it's not a bad idea, especially, I mean, it's never a bad idea to find a guy who's hot and hitting and put him in your lineup because, you know, you need the stats to win fantasy. So they're producing them, that's never a bad idea. Just I would caution people about sustainability.
So that is Bryce Turang. Then one other guy I want to mention, and this would be bullpen help. So kind of in the vein of what we were talking about last week, if you're looking for saves and holds and someone that you might kind of speculate on down the road, and that's Mason Miller with the A's. So we talked about the A's being a terrible team. We all know they're not going to win many games, and Mason Miller has kind of been a darling, I think, at least for people on paper. He was a starter last year, and then he missed most of the season. I think at the end of the season he came back kind of as a reliever, but now this season he's looked great. And he's made 3 appearances. The last 2, he has allowed 0 runs on 3 hits, 2 walks, and 7 strikeouts. Hitting 101. Against the Tigers,
I remember. Yeah.
Hitting 101, 102, And I think you could look at in a deeper league, if you need some bullpen help, he's someone I'd take a look at. I'm not saying he's going to get a lot of saves because there's not going to be a lot of save opportunities, but ratio help and maybe some holds. But I think he eventually will get an opportunity just because of his talent. And there's not much of that in Oakland.
Yeah. Big Mason Miller guy. He was a pop-up prospect. I think before last year, if I remember correctly. And I mean, he just high octane fastball, nice slider. Will get lots of opportunity. And I don't mean to just like be the rainy cloud of this podcast. I really don't, Nate. But I think it's important that we give a full surrounding of these players. Like we give every thought that we have.
Yeah, right? That's fair.
So Mason Miller, very talented pitcher. I have several Mason Miller shares. He will help you in fantasy. That's not what I'm saying when I say what I'm about to say. Sacramento is a major league minimum 325 down one of the lines. And down the other line, it's 330. So we are getting to a point now where any A's pitcher, when they're at home, is going to have to pitch there. And the dimensions aren't friendly. You know, it's kind of like what we talk about with Great American Ballpark in Cincinnati, where it's a Cracker Jack box. It's a box of cereal, whatever you want to call it. I've heard both. I like both. But I think you might run into the same thing with Oakland. I think the ball might start flat or Oakland, wherever.
Wherever they end up, yeah.
But I think we might see the ball start flying. I mean, you heard John Fisher. He wants to see Aaron Judge hit home runs there. So it's a small field, and that's my only worry when it comes to Mason Miller now, because he throws hard, and he's going to supply some power. So if a guy squares it up, it might be gone. So we might see his home run numbers tick up.
So kind of a Coors Field effect with the pitchers, where if they're on the road, it's a split situation. Maybe that would be a better opportunity. But yeah, like kind of how we've traditionally stayed away from Colorado Rockies starters at home. Mm-hmm. Just, you know.
Yeah.
I hadn't thought about that.
I hate that. But it's something to consider, because it's a small park. Again, 325, I think that's the number, is the major league minimum for fence length from home plate. And that's what they're working with now.
Yeah, that's not for major league baseball players. That is not very far.
No, and we're talking about they can hit bombs the opposite way, you know, 400 feet. 325 is not going to hurt them that much. That's a sack fly for some players. So, I roster too many Oakland A's pitchers to begin with, to be fair.
True.
But it does concern me for those that I do, which is, I think, just Mason Miller in a couple leagues. So it does concern me, though, because it's a smaller field, something to keep an eye on. I promise I do want baseball players to be good, but, you know, you got to think about the reasons they can be bad. Otherwise, you're going to get surprised a little bit. So, keep that in mind with A's pitchers, with Mason Miller, with whoever. And keep it in mind for A's hitters, too, on the flip side of that, right? Like maybe J.J. Bleday might get more tick because he's got a little bit of pop. If he can find barrel, he might hit more home runs, and all of a sudden
they'll start to
J.J. Bleday, you know, and that's just one example. So interesting to see how that plays out. Can't wait. I do know that right now we're going to take a quick break here on Coffee Talk. When we come back, we're going to be going over the next crop of prospects on MLB Pipeline, see if there's anybody to talk about for Nate Kosher. My name's Trevor Huth. We'll be right back with more of Coffee Talk on the Pitcherless Podcast Network. And welcome back to Coffee Talk on the Pitcherless Podcast Network. My name is Trevor Huth. Of course, my co-host is Nate the Great Kosher. And Nate, I don't know about you, but I'm ready for another cup of coffee, because that's what we do here on Coffee Talk. We are ready for that next cup of coffee. And it's time now for us to talk about prospects. So we're going to head back to that MLB Pipeline top prospect list. And we're starting at number 30, a guy we've kind of talked about a little bit already. So I will just leave the thoughts to you, Nate. That's one Mr. Heston Kerstad coming in at number 30.
Yeah, so obviously we just talked about his gigantic game that he had. But in this line of Orioles prospects, once again, someone that looks like a future stud, someone that's going to help you out on offense. He's currently profiled as a right fielder. They said it fits nicely in right field with an above average arm, but that's probably what's going to determine where he ends up when he gets to the big leagues, just because of the bevy of talent that the Orioles have. So someone with some definite talent, bat speed, makes a lot of hard contact, but I would expect he'll be in the big leagues this season. The timing of when he is up, I don't know if it will be enough to help with redraft leagues. I would say if he's on a different team, yes, but being the Orioles, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what happens. I can't say I'm feeling confident he'll have a spot, but we'll see.
I mean, he did play 13 games in Baltimore last year, got 30 at-bats. So you have to imagine as soon as there's an opening, or even he might force the hand beforehand, but he's on the radar. True. It's not like he's coming from zero.
True. That's right. Yeah. So just another guy. They all also kind of have the same hair, these Orioles guys, and they all kind of look the same. I get them confused. I don't know if you
that's the analysis that's worth price of admission.
That's right.
That's why we're here. So, Kerstad, we'll move on. Number 31 is Jacob Mizorowski, high-octane arm from the Brewers. The ETA on MLB Pipeline is 2025. We'll see if that happens. Jacob Mizorowski is 6'7" arm. Again, big slider, big fastball. Surprisingly, number 32. This is kind of shocking because right now he's in high A ball, but a 2024 ETA on recent draftee Rhett Lauder with the Cincinnati Reds. That's interesting. Good pitcher. I don't know about a 2024 debut date, but we'll see.
Yeah, that is interesting. I mean, that would be quite the jump. Running through the minors, we'll see what. Yeah, like you said, we'll see what happens. It says he received the most votes for best pitchability in MLB Pipeline's executive poll in 2024. A big reason why there's an expectation he could move very quickly through the Red system. Still,
this year is a little fast.
Seems like a stretch. Yeah, seems like a stretch to me.
Absolutely. So under him is a guy in AAA who could debut this year, and that is catcher Jefferson Cuero. We got a few catchers that we're going to talk about here today. You know, that's just a tough fantasy position for me. What do you think?
I agree. It's one that's always hard to fill, and over the past few seasons in one of my dynasty teams, I keep picking up prospects, and then for whatever reason, they haven't panned out, and maybe they're profiling as a catcher, but then they get up to the majors and they're playing the outfield or they're playing first base. And it's hard to hit on a stud catcher, I will say. Cuero is another guy, great defender. And so if you have a catcher who's good on defense, he's going to get his chances. But I don't know. It's hard for me to like feel, I guess what I'm trying to say, feel super confident about a catcher. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I'm the same way. And catching is not, I mean, there's only so many of those jobs. And unless you're in a two catcher league, I will punt catcher every single time, personally. That's just how I feel about it. I apologize if you're hearing any mic bumping or anything right now, by the way. I am fighting a cat very hard to be able to do this podcast. So give me one moment.
The eclipse has everyone going wild today.
Okay, so cat removed. We'll see what we can do here. Next on the MLB pipeline list, after Jefferson Cuero, by the way, if you do need a catcher and he does get called up this year, that's not a bad option. He's a pretty good hitter. I mean, that's originally what got people into him, or that's the first thing I heard about him personally. And then you realize he can play defense. Yeah. And he's a very, very good defender. And he mentioned, I mean, if you're a good defensive catcher, you'll get plenty of run. Think Martin Maldonado. Not very good offensively necessarily. but keeps getting run because he's great defensively, great, you know, can handle a pitching staff well, that kind of stuff. So defense does matter, especially with catchers.
It does. And teams will keep guys like that around, whether or not they get very many at-bats to help you in your fantasy. That's to be seen. So, yeah, we'll see.
For sure. So next on the list is Robbie Snelling. They have a 2025 ETA, a lefty pitcher with the Padres, who's pretty fun. He's got some nice stuff. Cole Young follows him at 35. Again, 2025 ETA. He's a middle infielder. And his Mariners friend, Harry Ford, comes in at 36. The three of those guys are in Double A. Nate, do you want to talk about any of those three?
I was just going to say Harry Ford is someone I'm interested in. Another catcher, like we talked about. But I think he's 21 years old, but he's someone that also has some speed. And so he has some potential where you could be looking at someone with just not some home runs, but also some steals, which is a even bigger coup at catcher if you can get someone who can steal some bases, right? So that's someone actually, I think I have him. I already have snagged him in one of my leagues, even though it could be next season when he finally arrives.
Yeah, I like Harry Ford. He's a guy who's gotten some attention, especially, as you mentioned, some speed out of the catcher position. For redraft, again, I don't know that he's going to be super, super relevant, but there's definitely some skill there that's interesting in terms of what he can provide from a fantasy baseball standpoint. So next, and this is probably the last guy in this crop that we really need to talk about right now, and that's Marco Luciano, shortstop from San Francisco. Power over hit. I believe we've already seen him debut in the majors. We did. He got 39 at bats last year, where he hit 231. He's in AAA right now, but I mean, likely to see time in San Francisco sooner than later, I'd imagine.
Yeah. So he is someone I had picked up last year just to see if he could make a difference. And as you said, he only had 14 games played, so not enough yet to see what he can do. But I think he'll be back. He's has some power. He's listed at 6'1", 178. He has had some back injuries, some issues both of the past two seasons. So that is something to, you know, keep an eye on. He could also end up outside of shortstop, potentially in the outfield, but he has power. So someone I would keep on my radar more so than the last few guys we've talked about.
Well, and he's got pedigree too. I mean, he was in the same breath as the top shortstops in recent years. I mean, obviously he's still in the top, you know, 40 prospects in baseball. But he was at one point a top 10 prospect in baseball, if I'm not mistaken, especially from a fantasy standpoint, right? Because of the power.
Yeah.
Now he's fallen off, and that's because he hasn't hit as well. But when he was in the lower minors, he was definitely a guy that people were super interested in. So I think you're right, a guy to keep an eye on more so than anybody else we've talked about. Just to round out this group, 38. So Luciano was 37. 38 is Kyle Teal. The catcher that the Red Sox just drafted, who came out and had a fantastic draft year in pro ball. So I liked Kyle Teal pre-draft. I thought he was going to be a pretty good hitter, and turns out he has been. They say he's a 2025 debut. He is in Double A right now, so we'll see, especially if he keeps hitting like a madman. 39th is the switch hitting outfielder from New York, the Martian, Jason Dominguez, who's out all year and hurt, unfortunately.
Yeah, unfortunately. Great nickname. He came up at the end of last season, did he not?
He did.
Yeah, okay. I thought so. They're high on him. I know that the Yankees expect a lot, but unfortunately, more Tommy John surgery. Not a pitcher. He's an outfielder, but he also had to have that done. So, as you said, he's not worth... While this season, otherwise, would be someone we'd be talking about if he wasn't hurt.
I'm super glad you kept talking, but I have no idea what you just said, Nate. This cat that's not leaving me alone just sat directly on top of all of my mic stuff, so I had to move all of that before he just crushed it and pulled it off.
Well, I brought Dominguez being injured. If he wasn't injured, it would be someone we'd talk about. The Yankees are pretty high on him.
Yeah, and he'd probably be in the majors right now. I, in my dynasty leagues, I've been trying to get him just to hold him on the IL all year, because right now his value is probably down because of the injury. And so, especially since I'm not competing really, I've been holding him on my IL whenever possible, just because he's talented and might help you next year. But that doesn't really help our redraft stuff this year. So, no. Rounding out the we stop at 39, don't we?
Yeah. So that's it.
So that's it. Number 40. I guess you'll have to wait to find out till next week, and or you could just look at MLB Pipeline's list. But some good names there. I think we're going to see that more and more, Nate, that as we go down this list, I think they're going to be less relevant to what we're talking about on Coffee Talk, because proximity is something that plays into these prospect lists, and the higher you get, the more value you have and the higher you'll be rated. Doesn't mean we're not going to find people, right? Because obviously upside plays the most factor. So we'll still find guys on the way through. But if you notice, 10 to 20, we're talking about almost every guy. And here, I think there were maybe two or three relevant-ish guys in this crop of 10.
Yeah, it could be we finish faster than 10 per episode, through the rest of the list, just because they're not going to make an impact this year, but still fun to think about and project down the road.
Well, and always got to be planning, always have a good plan. So knowing that, hey, maybe Dominguez or maybe Teal is a guy I can look at next year for a catcher, Harry Ford, whoever. I did think it was interesting that this is where all the catchers lie. Because you mentioned it earlier, it's hard to find a superstar catcher. I mean, you got to get Ethan Salas early. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to find that superstar level catcher. So, be keeping an eye out on that stuff, especially in dynasty leagues. Maybe you can make a trade. Obviously, they have value right now. But if you need a catcher, trade for a catcher. I have Adley in one league, and people keep trying to trade me catchers. And I'm like, I'm okay. Thank you. Right? So it's just one of those things. That's a really hard position. So, Nate, before we get out of here, why don't you tell people where they can find your work and what you're doing for Pitcherless, because now the season has started, our articles are going.
It is, yes. So I actually had a little bit of a switch from something I had said in a previous episode. I was talking about I was going to be doing catchers to stream, and actually that is not the case anymore. As we're talking about catchers, that's going to be going into a larger article looking at people to stream. So my main thing will be deep league risers and fallers. And so I'm working on my first article. I'll be writing that every other week. My first one is going to publish on Wednesday of this week, the April 10th. And so basically looking at people who are, as the title would suggest, rising or falling, sort of in reference to where you would expect them to be. So maybe it's a middle of the road guy, but he's doing great. So, he's on the rise, or it's someone who is supposed to be good and is not doing good. And so you think maybe it's time to, cut bait. And so, look for that every other week from me. That's kind of fun to look at, and there could be some Coffee Talk guys who sort of emerge. Maybe they're hot for a while and then they're not going to be doing so well. So I could see some of them popping up on those articles. And then you can find me at Nathaniel Kosher on X.
There you go.
Yeah, that's it.
There you go.
What about you? Has your first stuff came out yet?
Yeah. So day of recording today, Monday, my first expected starting pitcher article dropped.
Oh, nice.
And so keep an eye out for that. That's going to be a weekly article. I will caution you, somebody who wrote it, so me, I made a mistake while putting it together and the color coding on it is off. My bad. Colors mean nothing. If you are reading the expected starting pitching article, just look at the the opponents and make a decision based off who the team is, not the color that is with the sure. team. Because I just copied, I'll be honest, I just cloned an article from last year because I wanted the format and I didn't think about going back and that the colors would be the same. I didn't even honestly didn't cross my mind that the charts were going to be color coded. So that's on me.
Oh.
And I will fix that for next week and right. maybe try to get it done for this week. But either way, if you've read it or if you're going to read it, just ignore the color coding on this first one. My bad, mistakes happen. But it does have...
Next one's going to be great, Trevor.
Well, we'll see. But all the opponents are there, right? So you can look for the next four starts for okay. each rotation. Now, some of them, you know, I think there were a couple where I put the starter in, even though they're not technically healthy and back yet. And I tried to make note of that under the chart, I should say. And that is basically the format, right? I have the chart where you see everybody's start, and then under it, I'll give you a few thoughts. Like, for example, under Kansas City's, I just put Cole Reagans in all caps.
that works. That's appropriate.
Well, I felt as a pitcherless, a pitcherless writer, I had to just get overly excited about Cole Reagans. Otherwise, I might not be here that long. but you know what, though? You know what, though? You can look this up. You can look up Cole Reagans and my ex account at Huth Trevor, and you will see that I was in on Reagans before Nick.
Oh. All right.
To be fair, I'm a prospect guy and Nick is not. So I had a huge head start. But you will see that I was in on Reagans before Nick. And that is a very important distinction. And if you do listen to this and you do go look that up, I want you to quote tweet me tweeting about Reagans and tag Nick and tell him I was first.
Well, I think both of you are right because he looks like an ace.
So anyway,
I'll say that.
You can... You can find the expected starting pitching article. It's going to come out every single Monday. That's going to be happening again. You can find all my work at Huth Trevor. That's HOTHTREVOR on X. And of course, we're doing this coffee talk thing, Nate. Love that people are listening. So thank you guys so much for listening. We'll have more coffee talk coming up in a week. And of course, on coffee talk, we're always ready for that next cup of coffee for Nate Kosher. My name is Trevor Huth, and you've been listening to Coffee Talk on the Pitcher List Podcast Network.